Chapter 13. Farragut. As the bonny lass passed by, Willie. Hey, ho, bonnilus. P. She rooted me with glancing eye, W. As clear as the crystal glass. P. All as the sunny beam so bright, W. A. Ho, the sun nebum. P. Glanceth from Phobos's face forthright, W. So love into thy heart did stream. Spencer. Shepherd's Calendar. He kindliest symptom, yet the most alarming crisis in the ticklish state of youth, the nourisher and destroyer of hopeful wits, the servitude above freedom, the gentle mind's religion, the liberal superstition. Charles Lamb. The first sign of the unimagined snowstorm was like the transparent white cloud that seems to set off the blue. Anna was in the secret of Rex's feeling, though for the first time in their lives he had said nothing to her about what he most thought of, and he only took it for granted that she knew it. For the first time too, Anna could not say to Rex what was continually in her mind. Perhaps it might have been a pain which she would have had to conceal, that he should so soon care for someone else more than for herself, if such a feeling had not been thoroughly neutralized by doubt and anxiety on his behalf. Anna admired her cousin would have said with simple sincerity, Gwendolyn is always very good to me, and held it in the order of things for herself to be entirely subject to this cousin. But she looked at her with mingled fear and distrust, with a puzzled contemplation, as of some wondrous and beautiful animal whose nature was a mystery, and who, for anything Anna knew, might have an appetite for devouring all the small creatures that were her own particular pets. And now Anna's heart was sinking under the heavy conviction which she dared not utter, that Gwendolyn would never care for Rex. What she herself held in tenderness and reverence had constantly seemed indifferent to Gwendolyn, and it was easier to imagine her scorning Rex than returning any tenderness of his. Besides, she was always thinking of being something extraordinary. And poor Rex. Papa would be angry with him if he knew. And of course he was too young to be in love in that way. And she, Anna, had thought that it would be years and years before anything of that sort came, and that she would be Rex's housekeeper ever so long. But what a heart must that be which did not return his love! Anna, in the prospect of his suffering, was beginning to dislike her too fascinating cousin. It seemed to her, as it did to Rex, that the weeks had been filled with a tumultuous life evident to all observers. If he had been questioned on the subject, he would have said that he had no wish to conceal what he hoped would be an engagement which he should immediately tell his father of. And yet for the first time in his life he was reserved, not only about his feelings, but which was more remarkable to Anna about certain actions. She, on her side, was nervous each time her father or mother began to speak to her in private lest they should say anything about Rex and Gwendolyn. But the elders were not in the least alive to this agitating drama, which went forward chiefly in a sort of pantomime extremely lucid in the minds thus expressing themselves, but easily missed by spectators who were running their eyes over the Guardian or the Clerical Gazette, and regarded the trivialities of the young ones with scarcely more interpretation than they gave to the action of lively ants. Where are you going, Rex? Said Anna one gray morning when her father had set off in his carriage to the sessions, Mrs. Gaskin with him, and she had observed that her brother had on his antigropilos, the utmost approach he possessed to a hunting equipment. Going to see the hounds throw off at the Three Barns. Are you going to take Gwendolyn? Said Anna, timidly. She told you, did she? No, but I thought, does Papa know you are going? Not that I am aware of. I don't suppose he would trouble himself about the matter. You are going to use his horse? He knows I do that whenever I can. Don't let Gwendolyn ride after the hounds, Rex, said Anna, whose fears gifted her with second sight. Why not? Said Rex, smiling rather provokingly. Papa and Mama and Aunt Davilo all wish her not to. They think it is not right for her. Why should you suppose she is going to do what is not right? Gwendolyn minds nobody sometimes, said Anna, getting bolder by dint of a little anger. Then she would not mind me, said Rex, perversely making a joke of poor Anna's anxiety. Oh, Rex, I cannot bear it. You will make yourself very unhappy. Here Anna burst into tears. Nanny, Nanny, what on earth is the matter with you? Said Rex, a little impatient at being kept in this way, hat on and whip in hand. She will not care for you one bit, I know she never will, said the poor child in a sobbing whisper, as he had lost all control of herself. Rex reddened and hurried away from her out of the hall door, leaving her to the miserable consciousness of having made herself disagreeable in vain. He did think of her words as he rode along. They had the unwelcomeness which all unfavorable fortune-telling has, even when laughed at, but he quickly explained them as springing from little Anna's tenderness, and began to be sorry that he was obliged to come away without soothing her. Every other feeling on the subject, however, was quickly merged in a resistant belief to the contrary of hers, accompanied with a new determination to prove that he was right. This sort of certainty had just enough kinship to doubt, and uneasiness to hurry on a confession which an untouched security might have delayed. Gwendolyn was already mounted and riding up and down the avenue, when Rex appeared at the gate. As he had provided herself against disappointment in case he did not appear in time by having the groom ready behind her, for she would not have waited beyond a reasonable time. But now the groom was dismissed, and the two rode away in delightful freedom. Gwendolyn was in her highest spirits, and Rex thought that as he had never looked so lovely before, her figure, her long white throat, and the curves of her cheek and chin were always set off to perfection by the compact simplicity of her riding dress. He could not conceive a more perfect girl. And to a youthful lover like Rex it seems that the fundamental identity of the good, the true and the beautiful, is already extant and manifest in the object of his love. Most observers would have held it more than equally accountable that a girl should have like impressions about Rex, for in his handsome face there was nothing corresponding to the undefinable stinging quality, as it were a trace of demon ancestry, which made some beholders hesitate in their admiration of Gwendolyn. It was an exquisite January morning in which there was no threat of rain, but a gray sky making the calmest background for the charms of a mild winter scene. The grassy borders of the lanes, the hedgerows sprinkled with red berries and haunted with low twitterings, the purple bareness of the elms, the rich brown of the furrows. The horses' hoofs made a musical chime, accompanying their young voices. She was laughing at his equipment, for he was the reverse of a dandy, and he was enjoying her laughter. The freshness of the morning mingled with the freshness of their youth, and every sound that came from their clear throats, every glance they gave each other, was the bubbling outflow from a spring of joy. It was all morning to them, within and without. And thinking of them in these moments, one is tempted to that futile sort of wishing, if only things could have been a little otherwise then, so as to have been greatly otherwise after, if only these two beautiful young creatures could have pledged themselves to each other then and there, and never through life, have swerved from that pledge. For some of the goodness which Rex believed in was there. Goodness is a large, often a prospective word. Like harvest, which at one stage, when we talk of it, lies all underground, with an indeterminate future, is the germ prospering in the darkness? At another, it has put forth delicate green blades, and by the trembling blossoms are ready to be dashed off by an hour of rough wind or rain. Each stage has its peculiar blight, and may have the healthy life choked out of it by a particular action of the foul land which rears or neighbors it, or by damage brought from foulness afar. Anna had got it into her head that you would want to ride after the hounds this morning, said Rex, whose secret associations with Anna's words made this speech seem quite perilously near the most momentous of subjects. Did she? Said Gwendolyn, laughingly. What a little clairvoyant she is. Shall you? Said Rex, who had not believed in her intending to do it, if the elders objected, but confided in her having good reasons. I don't know. I can't tell what I shall do till I get there. Clairvoyants are often wrong. They foresee what is likely. I am not fond of what is likely. It is always dull. I do what is unlikely. Ah, there you tell me a secret. When once I knew what people in general would be likely to do, I should know you would do the opposite. So you would have come round to a likelihood of your own sort. I shall be able to calculate on you. You couldn't surprise me. Yes, I could. I should turn round and do what was likely for people in general, said Gwendolyn, with a musical laugh. You see, you can't escape some sort of likelihood. And contradictoriness makes the strongest likelihood of all. You must give up a plan. No, I shall not. My plan is to do what pleases me. Here, should any young lady incline to imitate Gwendolyn, let her consider the set of her head and neck. If the angle there had been different, the chin protrusive, and the cervical vertebrae a trifle more curved in their position, 10-1 Gwendolyn's words would have had a jar in them for the sweet-natured Rex. But everything odd in her speech was humor and pretty banter, which he was only anxious to turn toward one point. Can you manage to feel only what pleases you? Said he. Of course not. That comes from what other people do. But if the world were pleasanter, one would only feel what was pleasant. Girls' lives are so stupid. They never do what they like. I thought that was more the case of the men. They are forced to do hard things, and are often dreadfully bored, and knocked to pieces too. And then, if we love a girl very dearly, we want to do as she likes, so after all you have your own way. I don't believe it. I never saw a married woman who had her own way. What should you like to do? Said Rex, quite guilelessly, and in real anxiety. Oh, I don't know, go to the North Pole, or ride steeplechases, or go to be a queen in the East like Lady Hester Stanhope, said Gwendolyn, flightily. Her words were born on her lips, but she would have been at a loss to give an answer of deeper origin. You don't mean you would never be married? No, I didn't say that. Only when I married, I should not do as other women do. You might do just as you liked, if you married a man who loved you more dearly than anything else in the world, said Rex, who, poor youth, was moving in themes outside the curriculum in which he had promised to win distinction. I know one who does. Don't talk of Mr. Middleton, for heaven's sake, said Gwendolyn, hastily, a quick blush spreading over her face and neck. That is Anna's chant. I hear the hounds. Let us go on. She put her chestnut to a canter, and Rex had no choice but to follow her. Still he felt encouraged. Gwendolyn was perfectly aware that her cousin was in love with her, but as he had no idea that the matter was of any consequence, having never had the slightest visitation of painful love herself, she wished the small romance of Rex's devotion to fill up the time of his stay at Pennicott, and to avoid explanations which would bring it to an untimely end. Besides, she objected, with a sort of physical repulsion, to being directly made love to. With all her imaginative delight in being adored, there was a certain fierceness of maidenhood in her. But all other thoughts were soon lost for her in the excitement of the scene at the Three Barns. Several gentlemen of the hunt knew her, and she exchanged pleasant greetings. Rex could not get another word with her. The color, the stir of the field, had taken possession of Gwendolyn with a strength which was not due to habitual associations, for as he had never yet ridden after the hounds, only said she should like to do it, and so drawn forth a prohibition. Her mama dreading the danger, and her uncle declaring that for his part he held that kind of violent exercise unseemly in a woman, and that whatever might be done in other parts of the country, no lady of good position followed the Wessex hunt. No one but Mrs. Gadsby, the yeomanry captain's wife, who had been a kitchen maid and still spoke like one. This last argument had some effect on Gwendolyn, and had kept her halting between her desire to assert her freedom, and her horror of being classed with Mrs. Gadsby. Some of the most unexceptionable women in the neighborhood occasionally went to see the hound's throws off, but it happened that none of them were present this morning to abstain from following, while Mrs. Gadsby, with her doubtful antecedents, grammatical and otherwise, was not visible to make following seem unbecoming. Thus Gwendolyn felt no check on the animal stimulus that came from the stir and tongue of the hounds, the pawing of the horses, the varying voices of men, the movement hither and thither of vivid color on the background of green and gray stillness. That utmost excitement of the coming chase, which consists in feeling something like a combination of dog and horse, with the superadded thrill of social vanities and consciousness of scent or power which belongs to humankind. Rex would have felt more of the same enjoyment if he could have kept nearer to Gwendolyn, and not seen her constantly occupied with acquaintances, or looked at by would-be acquaintances, all on lively horses which veered about and swept the surrounding space as effectually as a revolving lever. "Glad to see you here this fine morning, Miss Harleth," said Lord Brackenshaw, a middle-aged peer of aristocratic seediness in stained pink, with easy-going manners which would have made the threatened deluge seem of no consequence. "We shall have a first-rate run. A pity you didn't go with us. Have you ever tried your little chestnut at a ditch? You wouldn't be afraid, eh?" "Not the least in the world," said Gwendolyn. And that was true. She was never fearful in action and companionship. I have often taken him at some rails and a ditch too, near, by Jove," said his lordship, quietly, in notation that something was happening which must break off the dialogue. And as he reined off his horse, Rex was bringing his sober hackney up to Gwendolyn's side, when the hounds gave tongue, and the whole field was in motion, as if the whirl of the earth were carrying it, Gwendolyn along with everything else. No word of notice to Rex, who without a second thought followed too. Could he let Gwendolyn go alone? Under other circumstances he would have enjoyed the run, but he was just now perturbed by the check which had been put on the impetus to utter his love, and get utterance in return, an impetus which could not at once resolve itself into a totally different sort of chase, at least with the consciousness of being on his father's gray nag, a good horse enough in his way, but of sober years and ecclesiastical habits. Gwendolyn on her spirited little chestnut was up with the best, and felt as secure as an immortal goddess, having, if as he had thought of risk, a core of confidence that no ill luck would happen to her. But she thought of no such thing, and certainly not of any risk there might be for her cousin. If as he had thought of him, it would have struck her as a droll picture that he should be gradually falling behind, and looking round in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.